provisions in, I believe I'm in Section 3, Subsection 1, page 4. And regarding this entire subsection, it also directs the Department of Agriculture, I believe, to, in some place in here, to develop the forms or approve the forms. I would like to point out that we are currently doing this. We do not include all of the information. We do, and the reason for that is, for example, like the person who supplied the pesticide, or when we get into aerial applications and FAA numbers, those are either available in our invoices, our other record-keeping systems we have in our offices, and or from the aerospray company. Second, the forms are available in mass. They're available from the chemical supply companies. They're available from our processing outlets. For example, I sell fruit in Oregon to Duckwall, and they have their own cards that they ask us to fill out. In addition, the new computer programs that are out have spray record programs in them, and then I have developed one. I have a WordPerfect, and I've developed one that serves my own use that does contain this information. So I find it to be a duplication of information already being kept. Section 3, subsection 4, along, in fact, I'll lump these together for time. Section 3, subsection 4, that regards giving the worker or worker's representative written information as described under subsection 1, which deals with the spray record. Subsection 3, section 5, the process to become a certified worker representative through Department of Ag. Okay, we'll stop there. I think that these kinds, what we're trying to do, I think, is to provide information on applications to the worker and or worker representative. There's another section in there, and for the people who are in the medical profession. My point I would like to make is that I believe that this information is available under current law. Hazardous communication, and one that has not been mentioned, is employee access to exposure and medical records. If you read the law, and if it would be, we heard that it is perhaps not being enforced, but those laws and protections are currently on books by two different laws in two different divisions, and if they are not being enforced, I would suggest that they should be enforced. Second, we do post, and we have under hazardous communication, the MSDS sheets, material safety data sheets, which have this same information. For example, anyone, I post, it's in English, it's in Spanish, and I post the material and what the reentry time is. Anyone walking by who would like to know what it is that was applied and when it was applied can read that information off the sheet, for example, and they would know that. I would also like to point out that it is the MSDS sheet, especially in a case of a medical emergency or medical problem of any kind, that the information on that sheet is more important than what's in my spray record. And that's a very important point to make. The spray record will not give you emergency medical information whatsoever. The MSDS sheet, which we currently have and is made available, is what's important. In regard to that, then, Section 3, Subsection 5, it asks the Department of Agriculture to certify worker representatives. I would say, given the duplications, as I just mentioned, already in law under hazardous communication, employee access to medical records, and also in lieu of the proposed 40% budget cut to the Department of Ag, I would suggest that this duplication of effort is not a good use of resource. Okay, under Section 4, Sections 1, 3, and 4A, that broadly regard litigation for personal injury. If you, in my review of these particular amendments, my overall comments would be they are vague, they lack essential definition and guidelines, and they duplicate protections already in law. Under subsection 3, section 6, it's regarding the receipt of other requests for information in subsection 1, which is again the spray records. If you read this section, subsection, We go from a definition of worker, which does not include, does not specify farm worker, for example, we are now to any person. So my question would be, there are no supporting definitions of any person anywhere that I can find in Senate Bill 756, and I would like to know what is meant by any person.
Where is this?
That would be...
That's line 18.
Okay. You guys are following better than I am. But anyway, it appears to me that we've gone from worker to any person, and that concerns me. I'd like to briefly touch on the additions to curriculum, which is Section 10, Subsection 2F, and Section 10, Subsection G. I think Tom mentioned it, but again, I would like to point out that these are the addition of first aid procedures and IPM into the private applicator's license curriculum. That first aid course that we do with the American Red Cross is an 8-hour course. Secondly, there is already curriculum available and in the private applicator's license that addresses first aid. I think it's very difficult to ask me. I hold my first aid card. I have my applicator's license. My other employee who applies has his first aid cards. I think I am in a medical emergency. It is the, particularly if you're mixing, it is the label of the container that you need to be able to read. It has the label on the container is what I need immediately. My first aid training that I have, I think, helps, but I need to be able to read that label. And then I think it is more appropriate that I administer first aid and then I dial 911. And I think the information, rather than to, like I say, the first aid course is an 8-hour course, and I don't think you can add this particular, I think you're wishing for the sky to add this kind of more information in addition to what's there. In regard to the IPM, I just want to briefly mention that this particular definition of IPM is not complete. That I think it was last week on the radio, I was listening to the news, and a Gallup poll has just been reported that 84% of the American farmers are familiar with IPM. Second, I would just like to point out, this is just one of the publications I receive, and it is an entire issue of the Good Fruit Grower on biological control. The point being that we do not have our heads in the sand, that the university, our Oregon State University and Washington State University routinely do seminars, as I attended in February, that was 3 days long, on biological controls and on new generation, as we call them, new generation chemicals, which are things like juvenile hormone mimics, etc. And if you look at the current curriculum for the private pesticide applicator, it includes things like host resistance, sanitation, biological control, and I don't know what else, but it is already there. And I think we're best to leave that it is a very complicated field. We are using it now. I don't know anyone who does not use some form of IPM in our orchards. It's too costly not to. We use economic thresholds. We definitely make counts of both detrimental and beneficial insects. I would suggest to you gentlemen, the days of lead, arsenic, and sulfur are long gone, and that we no longer spray just to be spraying, or that because we may have a problem. We are intimately familiar with IPM, and we have to be as business people. And I would suggest that the current curriculum, if you have not taken the test or workshop, is very difficult, as it should be. I would suggest, again, that if you'd like to be helpful, that we have the Spanish-speaking version of the curriculum and that we not attempt to water it down with things that are already there and are more appropriately provided by the American Red Cross in our universities.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Shoemaker.
Is your testimony in writing, Bill?
No, but I can do that.
Could you? Particularly because I had to be gone for a little bit of it.
Okay.
Well, we had, I
staff has been following along, making copious notes. So I think we're aware of, I think, of each of the points you raised, but if you could take the time to submit that to Ryder,
I'd be fine.
Another question. I know that you were involved 2 years ago in a number of bills then that were concerned with farm worker protection, and I think your testimony was quite helpful. Were you consulted at all regarding this bill?
No, I was not.
Thank you.
What's your company? Where
Excuse me?
What's your outfit's name? What do you call yourself?
Rodakamar Farms, Inc. I'm president, vice president, secretary. I'm the sole proprietor of that 65-acre farm.
That's the great Hukari family.
There's a lot of us.
Okay. And now you're in a cooperative. Hood River Grower Shipper Association. Okay.
So. That's a three. Tom's the manager of that organization.
But
I happen to be the chair.
Recognize him.
Huh?
You've been before us before.
Yeah. Yes. And I chair the board of directors of that association. We have 320 commercial grower members in the Mid-Columbia area.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Senator Kintai.
Are your MSDS statements really available, and you're helping those where they are?
Yes,
they
sir.
Need them?
Like I say, I certainly hope that what we've heard up to this point is the exception, because whenever I'm out to spray, my people know what it is I'm spraying, they know when I'm going to spray, and when they can come back, I ask them to move their cars if they're in the way, and anything else. I have no wish to have sick or injured employees.
Sir.
If I might just make one last statement. A little bit of what we saw a little earlier, and I think a lot of what might be driving this bill, is we've got irresponsible farming and we've got responsible farming. And as in a group in Hood River, we have no sympathy for irresponsible farmers. And I think if there are some irresponsible situations going on out there through OSHA or through Department of Agriculture, they need to go and find those and correct them. By a bill such as this, what might tend to happen, which happens a lot to us in Hood River, is there's new legislation written which the good responsible farmers go to great efforts to meet, but the outlaws or the irresponsible farmers don't change one iota of what they do, and they continue. And the next session we can continue and have the same thing happen again. So the thing we would like to point out is I'm not in opposition to the concept of the bill. I am in opposition to the bill, but I believe through enforcement of existing rules and regulations through the Department of Health and whatever, because this bill touches into a lot of different categories, get that job done, and it'll be just as effective as attempting to generate new legislation.
Okay.
Thank you.
Very
Thank
much.
Senators.
Now, who's next on the hit parade? Okay, we have Ms. Sugarman and Mr. Fisher. Yeah, we heard from the health division. All right, who goes first?
I'll go first. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, good afternoon and thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Quincy Sugarman. I'm an environmental advocate for the Oregon State Public Interest Research Group. OSPRG is a statewide consumer and environmental research and advocacy organization with 30,000 members. Today I'm suggesting strengthening amendments to Section 3, the record-keeping section of Senate Bill 756. By definition, pesticides are poisons, and very few of the active ingredients in pesticides have been fully tested for adverse health effects. Because of concerns about exposure to these toxic chemicals, records of the type and quantity of all controlled pesticides used need to be available to all affected parties, farm workers, and public health and environmental officials and citizens. In 1985, OSPRG was involved in passing the Community Right to Know Act. This legislation gives government agencies and citizens access to statewide information about toxic chemicals used in manufacturing. Records are kept centrally in the state farm marshal's office. We respectfully suggest amending and strengthening Section 3, the record-keeping sections of SB 756, to include more of this type of provisions. It is important to include all classes of pesticide users defined in Oregon law, to centralize the data in one state agency, and to allow access to that data for all citizens. This will build on current requirements that some pesticide operators are subject to and will create a statewide picture of pesticide use. Record keeping is simple and workable. 10 states already have some form of pesticide record keeping. Many large food processors and grower cooperatives already require some records to be kept. And certainly for the purposes of economics, many of the growers already keep records tracking the cost and efficacy of the pesticides used. Record keeping is also essential for environmental protection. Without accurate records of what pesticides are applied, when and in what quantities, it is difficult to investigate the effects of those chemicals on surface and groundwater, wildlife populations, and environmental quality overall. In addition, record keeping will aid in implementation and enforcement of specific environmental regulations, including those related to pesticide use and groundwater protection. Record keeping is also important, obviously, for investigation of pesticide poisoning of workers and the public. Citizens of the state should have good information about chemicals used in the air, land, and water of their communities, including pesticides. Expanded use reporting of pesticides would complement existing community right to know programs and would build a fuller picture of chemical emissions in Oregon. I thank you, and I would be happy to answer any questions. In addition, I've spoken with Jean Cameron of the Oregon Environmental Council, and she supports our statements on expanded pesticide use reporting.
Mr. Fisher.
My name is Brett Fisher. I'm with the Northwest Coalition for Alternatives to Pesticides. We were founded in 1977, and the individuals and citizens groups that make up our coalition work on pesticide issues. We offer the following testimony in support of Senate Bill 756. I'm going to try to dispel the idea that problems with pesticides in agriculture and other work situations are the exception, because they're not. If you just look at the 1988 and 1989 reports produced by the Pesticide Analytical and Response Center, half of the incidents reported to them occurred in agricultural situations. They ran the gamut of didn't know what was sprayed, it drifted on us, it was an accident using a restricted material. So it's a common incident that there are problems. Since 1979, EPA has been trying to, the Environmental Protection Agency, has been trying to develop regulations to increase protection for farm workers. To date, they haven't come out with anything, and so there's an opportunity for the state of Oregon to take some action. I address my comments first to Section 1 on the supervision. The EPA is considering a three-tiered system to having a certified applicator be present when restricted-use pesticides are being used by someone who's not trained or certified. Level 1 would require the certified applicator to use the chemicals. Level 2 would require the applicator to be on-site and be able to get to the area of application within 5 minutes. Level 3 would not require the applicator's presence. The cost estimates for this tiered scheme and the agency documents to support this reveal that most restricted-use pesticides would fall into level 3, yielding little change from the status quo. So you have the opportunity here to require the certified applicator to be present within the vicinity or actually able to observe the application of restricted-use pesticides, increasing the protection for those workers. EPA is not taking that action.
Senator Kintyre.
How would you respond to the problem that was presented by a previous witness here where in the orchard it would not be able to visibly see? Would you construe that as being under supervision, although they might not be visibly seen, but could be only maybe 50, 75 yards away?
I think that what EPA calls a level 2 situation is appropriate, that the person is on the site, they're not in the next state, or in the next city over available by phone, that they're on the site during the application of the restricted materials. I think that's a good enough compromise.
So, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hill.
So if the applicator drives behind the barn and the line of sight is interrupted, you would see that as fine.
Yes.
If there's a line of trees, it may immediately there, and there isn't visible contact, you would say that would be okay too, as long as they were nearby, someplace close.
Correct.
Okay, so you would interpret can be observed to mean not at all times during the application, but within a reasonable period of time, observation could be achieved. They could walk around the barn, for instance.
Correct.
They
don't have to ride next to them in the tractor.
Yeah, well, the problem is one of line of sight.
Yeah.
and a strict construction of the word observed. And the question is that they want them to be on the site or on the property or on the, within the operation of or et cetera. Those kind of weasel words that say you're there and they're there and they're doing their thing under your supervision and control, and they're not visually, you know, visible to you, but could be by virtue of the fact that you're working in the same location.
Mr. Chairman?
Actually, was in the form of a question. That's what you're trying to get to with observed, or do you want line of sight?
No, I think I said that line of sight. This doesn't have to be line of sight that they are within. They're on the site being where the pesticides are being used. They can get to the place if there's an emergency. And I'm sure we could add a definition to this section here just for this part of the law to just clarify what that means.
Okay. Senator Hill.
The intent is stated here in lines 21 and 22, and the intent is to be able to assure compliance. So that's the intent of the observation. So rather than take a strict constructionist view, narrowly interpreting observe, the intent here is for the licensed person, the person responsible, to be able to assure that the individual using the pesticide does so in compliance with the law and safety requirements. That doesn't mean line of sight connection at all times. As Camille pointed out, she's not able to do that when she has someone else applying and she's applying also. But there should be means by which to assure compliance.
I also think NCAP did not request this bill, and the discussion with the Coalition of Farm Worker Advocates, they might explain what they actually meant
right.
by observation.
Right. Okay. You may continue.
Onward. Also, it was interesting to note that between 1980 and 86, all the incidents reported in the state of California, 8 of every 10 involved restricted-use pesticides. And so this is a considerable threat here to the worker safety. And also, it's interesting to note that last year, Texas adopted requirements that restricted-use pesticides be only used by licensed applicators. And so I think this bill falls in between doing nothing about it and being extreme, as in the state of Texas. On use reporting, for the most part, we'll defer to Osberg's comments. Also, I'd like to add that we think also that the state should produce an annual report analyzing the data from pesticide use. That'll give us a chance to predict potential problems and prevent them from happening. Section 9 of the bill deals with the mishap reporting. It should be noted that the Pesticide Analytical and Response Center says that incidents reported to them understate the problem in the state. At a hearing this morning, that was a very common statement made on Senate Bill 740, which would authorize PARC. It's the tip of an iceberg, and requiring those who use pesticides as part of their business to report incidents will help us get some of the other problems, get medical attention to them, also to analyze trends of problems and correct those. And thank you for listening to my testimony.
Questions of these witnesses?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hill.
One for Quincy. In summary, Osberg is suggesting amendments to the record keeping to allow public access to the records?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hill, that's correct.
And the way you're suggesting it is to compile those records someplace?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hill, that's correct. This is modeled on the Community Right to Know program for industrial chemicals, wherein the reports are sent in annually to the state fire marshal's office. And there's a file cabinet physically, and then they also compile their hazardous substance survey on a computer disk.
Another alternative might be to allow a person who has reasonable grounds to be interested some fair method of accessing the private records rather than consolidating them, which would have a fiscal impact and would be difficult to achieve, this session at least, to allow somebody who has reason to believe they've been impacted by drift, for instance, a neighbor whose child was playing in the yard and the drift came over from the field 100 yards away, to have access to the to that data under some fair means. Would that be something that would go at least partway towards your goal?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hill, that would go partway towards the goal, and I believe the Senate Bill 756 includes certain provisions for a person, I don't have the exact language, believing that they're reasonably believing that they were exposed. Our concern is to go beyond that immediate individual, which is certainly important, to look at broader environmental exposures and potential problems with that, as well as just to get an overall picture of pesticide use for implementation of environmental and other regulation.
Well, I see in Section 4, any person who claims to have sustained any personal injury, establishing first that you sustained a personal injury and then establishing where that personal injury came from is a very difficult course to follow. And especially it's difficult to follow if you're not aware of what the substance was that was utilized next door, so you can't establish that the injury arises out of that utilization and exposure. So that one puts the cart in front of the horse, I think, rather than the other way around. So what I'm suggesting is if you have reasonable grounds to believe, something along that line, reasonable grounds to believe you have been exposed to something that is regulated, you don't have to prove injury, you don't have to prove the origin of their injury, but you are able to access the data and see if it's possible you may have been exposed to Moxoni or whatever. But you have to know what it is first.
Well, the problem is one of two different goals. One, I think the bill meets the goal that you suggest, Senator Hill. I think the larger one that the Osberg Amendment goes to is providing for an overall survey of use and area and time of use and providing a chemical profile of the state.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Which is far different. Different purpose, different result. Okay. We'll take it up. Were there questions of these witnesses? If not, let's see, who we got next? Mr. Castagna, is that right? Okay. Mr. Castagna.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Bob Castagna, representing the Oregon Catholic Conference. We'll be very brief in our testimony, but we do want to go on record in support of Senate Bill 756. You have people who not only speak Spanish, but other dialects coming from Mexico and Central American countries. To the extent that these people are unfamiliar with the substances they're dealing with, the instructions, et cetera, it creates a significant health hazard. Health hazard not only to themselves, their families, people they immediately come into contact with, potentially health hazards to those who consume the food, health cost expenses for the people in the community. We think this is a basic human right that these people should know what they're doing, what is being done to the fields in which they are working. So we see it as a basic human right, would support the bill.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate it. Let's see, Dr. Gordon.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dr. Jane Gordon, and I'm Deputy State Epidemiologist with the Oregon Health Division. I'm here today because on my staff are the individuals who do illness investigations, and that's pursuant to our rules which require reporting of pesticide illness. The Oregon Health Division is strongly in support of the intent of Senate Bill 756 to provide a safer working environment for farm workers and increased record keeping for better tracking of pesticide use and potential human exposure. The safe and judicious use of pesticides is important in maintaining the safety of Oregonians and their environment. The addition of personal injury as a trigger for an investigation by the Department of Agriculture under the concept of report of loss is an added safeguard. The Health Division is willing to provide the consultative support to the Department of Agriculture as specified in the bill. The concern we have is that without additional resources, both agencies will not be able to fulfill the expectations of complete investigation of all reports that may warrant such action. The division has two suggestions for Senate Bill 756. The first is to broaden the proposed record-keeping requirements to include the application by unlicensed individuals and those who use non-restricted pesticides on their own property for the purpose of producing crops for commercial sale. It's our information that there are more non-restricted chemicals in use in Oregon than there are restricted. And, in fact, much of this material does reach the marketplace. In addition, it would also, these records would provide a useful tool for the investigations of personal injury, which are required by the bill. And the second, again, is to ask that you consider adequate resources for both agencies so we can work effectively together. If there are any questions, I'll be happy to answer.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hill.
I'm taking your point about the resources to add up to a fiscal impact.
I'm sure it will add up to something. There is another bill under consideration.